I would listen to it, and I probably will listen to it. I mean, I don't think there's anything on here I wouldn't listen to twice. I think what we covered next maybe is a little forgettable for me right now, which is why I should probably listen to it a second time.
Well, what did you think? What did you think of the Higdon and the Puts? We can start with the Higdon.
I mean, Higdon was probably of these, what, five or six composers that we have here, I thought was maybe the most forgettable. I mean, admittedly, Shaw has a real benefit in that, as you said, the left turn makes her very difficult to forget.
Yeah.
But I really liked Shaw, whereas I found Higdon just a little bit, again, a little forgettable. And maybe that is sort of the following Richter immediately up with Higdon. For me, maybe I should have taken a 10-minute break.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, but you just got done listening to this big, this large-scale work. Whereas, you know, the Higdon's a concerto, but it's a shorter concerto, whereas the Four Seasons are like 40 minutes long. So you would, you know, understandably, coming down from this long reworking of a pretty familiar piece to something that is less familiar, that is perhaps shorter, and I can understand that.
I might give her actually another chance today, now that I think about it. Maybe I'll start with the concerto today and then go with the four. I actually really like the four airs. Again, the concerto is the one that stuck out to me as maybe, and I hate to use the term forgettable because I understand the amount of talent that goes into really putting something like this together to put it. I mean, am I one to judge the work of Jennifer Higdon? I think that there is certainly some context here that's important, that I had just listened to this epic reworking by Max Richter. So I will give Higdon a second shot. I will say that there was nothing on here that I actively disliked.
Yeah.
And I'd be very surprised if you had actually recommended anything that you thought I might dislike.
No.
But the term forgettable was the first thing that stuck into my mind when I was listening to it. And that's probably not fair to Jennifer Higdon.
I think the most difficult thing that I recommended on there was the Shaw, because it is the one that sounds least like traditional classical music. It is vocal. And there's another thing about classical vocal music on the radio, which we will talk about in a bit. We'll get to your opinion of Kevin Puts as well. But yeah, the Shaw is definitely the weirdest of the pieces, in a lot of different ways. And I didn't want to make a list of new music that I would find immediately unpalatable to somebody who hadn't been used to listening to new music, because there is plenty of new music that is pretty thorny, that perhaps isn't radio friendly, so to speak. I would play all of these on the radio except for the Caroline Shaw, because I think the Shaw is a little bit too weird. But I actually have played the Adams, the Richter, and the Higdon on the radio before.
That's interesting. I would think, you see, the thing with Shaw is I think people who are listening to classical music or are listening to a classical station probably have a relative, I would like to think, would have a relatively open mind, because I actually really liked Shaw. Just because at first it wasn't what I was expecting doesn't mean that it didn't wind up satisfying exactly what I was looking for. So I don't know, that to me would hope that there would be a level of open-mindedness that would go into it. If you gave people enough warning, again, you can't just, you know, if you go back to U92, it's experimental music on the radio.
Right.
You can't simply just throw out some really, really bizarre, if you go back 10 years ago, you can't throw out some really bizarre Radiohead song off of Kid A without starting maybe with something more palatable from the Strokes. That was That's sort of the whole point. So there we go. We've dumbed it down into college radio terms.
you bookend the pieces with pieces that are a little bit more palatable, so that you know that you're looking forward to something that sounds a little bit more like music to you, if you didn't think this sounded like music. you said you liked the Kevin Puts pieces.
I did, and I'll probably give them a second listen. Actually, I'm going to give this whole playlist a second listen today, but maybe I'll skip Richter. I really liked Puts. One of the things that stood out to me is that they all band together, and I actually enjoyed that. Again, I'm someone who actually likes additional length in terms of musical or media pieces. So it all sort of ran together, and the point where I stopped to think to myself, man, is this over yet,
rather I check a couple of times and see, wait, which one am I on? Which one am I on? So I don't know that I could specifically go between number one, two, and four and say, oh yeah, this was my favorite. But I can say for the, you know, however long I listened to them, I enjoyed what I was listening to. I thought it was really, actually, it was a palate cleanser of the entire playlist.
The puts.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That is good to know. So the first impressions, we're doing this literally for now that my series, before I had you come on and do this, my idea for this was back in September, and I hadn't actually started the first impression series next. So it's cool to have you on to talk about your first impressions about this piece, because it plays literally into what my new thing is called.
I look forward to hearing what other first impressions may be when it comes to him. And I will also be texting you my second impressions.
Yes.
when I've given them a more thorough list. Unless I really dislike something, I don't like just giving my first initial visceral reaction, because there are plenty of things that I've started out hating and have gone the other direction.
Right. I imagine you're going to write about these.
I am.
Yeah. So once you write about them, let me know what you're willing to have me publish on the post about this, because I'm going to publish the talk that we have, and then I can publish your written opinions as well.
Okay. That works.
That way you get a bit of time to think about it before actually writing about it, so that they can be more of the composed response to the pieces. Perhaps after you've listened to them a couple of times.
Yeah. And I think that puts the pressure on for sure. Now I have to listen to this a second time, no matter what, because I was going to write about Adams and I was going to write about Shaw, because I mean, I feel like almost violates the spirit of the rule just a little bit of what I'm trying to follow. So I'm just definitely going to write about Adams and Shaw, but I should probably go with Higdon first and then go into puts and listen to them. And that way I can make it comprehensive. It's the John Search classical recommendation. I enjoyed my 2 hours. I myself doing a lot of things while playing this music, because I will say some of this music does not require you to be exceptionally present. Mm-hmm. Some of it can transport you and you don't need to be focused on doing in the moment.
Yeah. Now, a few things now that you have finished listening to the pieces that I want to tell you about these pieces. First of all, like I said, they were all composed within the last 10 years. Now, Kevin Putz is a professor of composition at Peabody, where I went to grad school. And can you guess which of those composers has not won a Pulitzer Prize for music?
Wow. Caroline Shaw? I have no idea.
You know what's funny about your guess there? The Partita for Eight Voices is the only piece in that group that did win the Pulitzer Prize for music. So that that work won Caroline Shaw her Pulitzer. Okay. Have another guess at who didn't win a Pulitzer?
I feel like it's not Professor Putz. I feel like you were trying to throw me off the trail with that. So
he has won a Pulitzer.
Okay. So let's go with Max. Let's go with Max Richter.
That is right. Max Richter has not won the Pulitzer Prize for music. Kevin Putz won his for his opera Silent Night. Jennifer Higdon won hers for her violin concerto. That was composed for the violinist Hilary Hahn, who also is from Baltimore. And John Adams' Pulitzer was, let me just go back. This was On the Transmigration of Souls is what won him his Pulitzer Prize. And they also all have a bunch of Grammy Awards between them. The Higdon Viola Concerto won a Grammy for Best Classical Recording. I know Max Richter has won, or at least been nominated for Grammys before. And then John Adams, I'm pretty sure he has a Grammy as well. Of course, Grammys don't matter quite as much as Pulitzers when it comes to, you know, actual musical judgment rather than just sales. But I actually think the classical Grammys actually mean something when it comes to that, because it winds up being for pretty interesting music, or at least good performances.
And On the Transmigration of Souls was the piece he wrote after 9/11, wasn't it?
Yes, that was right after 9/11. Yep. And so also, so the Absolute Jest is also a concerto. It is for orchestra and string quartet. And the like I said before, the Richter is written for Baroque ensemble. The beginning of Spring is electronics that Max Richter put together. But the rest of it is just the instruments that you would play the Four Seasons with, except playing different versions of the Four Seasons. Caroline Shaw's piece, of course, is for 8 voices. And the Puts, you may have heard, was for a different instrument and piano for each of the 4 airs.
Is this, would you, this is a fair playlist for anyone who is sort of a layman like I am when it comes to cool music and classical stylings? Is this a fair playlist to try and jump into if you're interested in sort of hearing or broadening your horizons? Would this be a fair playlist to try kind of springboard yourself off of into the genre?
I would say for new music, not for classical music in general, but for new music. And that's why I wanted it to be like one step further. So like you don't listen to classical music that much, and then we're taking it a step further and doing music that's been composed within the last 10 years. And the thing is that classical music in the 20th century, it largely got into a very experimental vein. A lot of atonal music was being composed, and consequently, you don't hear a lot of 20th century music on classical radio. And it's made people just, it's turned people off to the idea of new music, because I think the fact that new music has become more traditionally tonal has not quite entered the public conscience yet. There's so much accessible new music to listen to, and there's a lot of inaccessible new music to listen to as well, which is just as good, perhaps better in some cases, but it just doesn't quite meet the radar. It doesn't quite meet the standards of being able to play it on a medium that you can't turn it off in the middle, because... You know, it's, I mean, unless you're on U92, in which case, I mean, when I started the classical show, or rather sort of revamped the classical show on U92, my intention was to be able to have new music to play. You remember some of the crazy stuff that I would play on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny. The creation of the show also includes film scores. What's your take on that?
Oh, yeah. No, by all means. And what I was saying earlier about Anna Jett's article is that film score has been underappreciated. And that's the thing. You know, you can laugh at John Williams all you want. And granted, he does steal quite a bit from earlier composers. Like if you listen to Leia's theme in the end of Empire Strikes Back, na, 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 that's taken directly from the end of the opera Carmen by Georges Bizet. If you listen to the final duet at the end of Carmen, you will hear Don José sing almost that exact theme that inspired that theme that John Williams composed for Star Wars.
It's one of the most powerful endings to film in cinematic history. Oh, well done. Good stealing.
Yeah.
I will say this about John Williams. I believe he's on record as having said, I don't know if this was about his entire body of work on the film side of things, or if it was just Star Wars related. I think it might've been just Star Wars related.
Yeah.
Williams actually said he had consider any of the work he did on Star Wars remotely memorable.
Yeah.
None of the pieces were start, and here I am, like I can recognize them all instantly, you know. I mean, I guess this is the difference between John Williams and I, but I recognize every single one instantly, and for him it's just dance.
I mean, they're classical music's pop songs, and I think that they could be, you know, I think they're a legitimate way to introduce somebody to classical music. Because, I mean, especially the way that Star Wars borrows from classical music history. You know, John Williams borrows from Puccini all the time for his scores. And he, like I said, he borrowed from Bizet for The Empire Strikes Back. So it's a great way to introduce somebody into the world of classical music. And you don't think of it that way because you associate it with a different kind of medium.
Does it surprise you that I have on occasion, I have playlists with films on them when I just listen to film scores? Does it surprise you at all that the ending theme of Empire Strikes Back is first thing on those playlists?
Oh, certainly not.
Got Carmen out that I'll have to find a soundtrack somewhere that I can give it a listen.
But yeah, I mean it's the opera Carmen, like so just listen to a recording of the
there must be a recording somewhere.
Oh, there are tons. Carmen is actually the second most performed opera like that there is. I think it's second only to La Boheme. Which you ever heard of the musical Rent? That is based on the Puccini opera La Boheme.
I am familiar. I've never seen Rent. You and I have talked about this. I'm not huge on musicals.
I've
been to Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway. Yeah, it's not a huge semi, but
yeah.
But film scores, is a different story.
Right.
I think you talk for hours, maybe not hours, but I could talk for a while about Howard Shore, and it's really bothering me that I can compose the Star Trek, the new Star Trek stuff, because I actually thought those were great scores.
Yeah. To the internet. We can find this out. Let's see.
Yeah.